use our time as best we can. The text that we're doing, and I should mention this, we have a guest with us here today for the first time. We do the Gospel in the Old Testament 10 days ahead. Not the next Sunday, but 10 days ahead, so that for the students who are doing sermons, they have enough time to get it to their pastor to take a look at it. 3-4 days ahead isn't going to do much good. So our passage for today, our pericope, is Luke 19:28-40, which is the entry into Jerusalem. And basically, we have now the end of this long travel narrative. Now, if you'll just page back to chapter 9, verse 51, if you'll just go back there, that was the beginning of this section. And this is, you'll notice if you have the Nestle text, you'll notice in the side margin of 9:51, that there's no parallel passage to the other Gospels here. So as it says here, you know, it came to pass when the days of his taking up were being fulfilled that he himself set firmly the face, his face, to travel unto Jerusalem, to go to Jerusalem. Now, that reaches its fulfillment, and that's the so-called, what's sometimes been called, the travel narrative in Luke. That reaches its fulfillment now. Now go to our text in 19:28. After the mina parable. And having said these things, he began to journey empress then before, in front, going up unto Jerusalem. Now, this is a great Lucan theme for two reasons. Number one is the journey to Jerusalem, which is the center. It's the center of the whole narrative for Luke, and it's certainly where a prophet has to die, as Jesus says. But also, note the empress then. You don't want to miss out on this, that he was journeying before them, empress then. Now, the reason I'm kind of picking on this a little bit is that for Luke, one thing that is critical is Jesus as the example for his disciples. So here we can see Jesus walking in front of them, or if I may put it in a different way, them following in the footsteps of Jesus, which is a very major theme. We see this highlighted. We won't be doing this in our run-through on these Wednesdays, but if you take a look at the Garden of Gethsemane incident, you'll see that the disciples mimic and follow just what Jesus does. So this is a rather important passage, and you don't want to pick it up with 29. You want to have 28 in there. Eparoyata is third singular, imperfect, indicative passive. It's a passive deponent. So with the imperfect, you could say, having said these things, he continued on, he proceeded to journey before them into Jerusalem. I think the proceeded is often a good way to handle these. 29. And it came to pass, as he angisen, third singular aorist indicative active of angidzo, as he drew near unto Bethphage and Bethany, pros, facing toward, face to face with, the mountain, ta oros, ta kalumenon. That is a neuter participle, passive, present passive, which was habitually called of Olives. Olives, the Mount of Olives, as it was habitually called, the one which was habitually called that. And so it came to pass as he did this. This is a nice Hebraic touch, the kaiagenata and then op estylen. He sent out, now notice he doesn't use pempo here, but apostello, so this is on a specific mission with authority. Remember, apostello is to send people out as fully empowered ambassadors. He sent out two of the disciples, saying, "Hup agate, go, depart, get going, unto the kat en anti, that means kind of what's over against you, facing, the facing village, en he, in which, eis poroi amenoi hoi resete pola, in which, journeying into it, you will discover a polon, a donkey, a horse, a mule. This is actually, there's a little bit of controversy on this as to what this actually means. Probably a donkey works pretty well here, but there's ample evidence in the papyri that that this meaning horse, it was a common meaning, but probably given, as we know from the other Gospels, given the whole context and so forth, it's probably to be taken the way we normally do. Hoiresete, second person plural, future indicative active from hoirisko. You will discover a polon, de menon. All right, now that's from deo, to bind. So this is a perfect passive participle. A donkey bound. You will discover, you will find a bound one. F hun, upon which no one ever of men sat. On which nobody of people, no person. And of course, that's a rather awkward phrase, and you can bet that there is a variant there, and of course there is. Some switch the two words around, and others simply omit popote, so no one of men, on which no one ever of men sat. And, oh my land, a form of lio. What is this? Lysantes. And lysantes auton agagete. And upon loosing it, lead it. Again, you're going to take the it, the auton, as the object of both lysantes and agagete, dropping the object in between the two things. Agagete, second person plural, aorist, imperative, active. You'll remember for ago, it's one of the few strong aorists that has a longer third principal part than the first principal part. 31. And if somebody, notice the tis doesn't have the accent there, so that's somebody, indefinite. And if somebody erota, a-o contract verb, third singular, present indicative active. If someone asks us, South Milwaukee, on account of why are you loosing, it's incredible seeing all these forms of lio, isn't it? Hutos eraite. Thus you will say. Now you can take the hoti, I mean don't be deceived by the little raised dot there, because of course the manuscripts didn't have any of that. But they're taking it that the hoti is just introducing direct discourse, which may well be. Ha curios autu chryon echai. The Lord has need of it. Chryon, need, and then autu, need of it. Now, what I found interesting in just kind of reading through this is, should you take autu with curios? His Lord has a need, which would be interesting, and I might say probably makes a great periodical article and is probably wrong. But it is interesting, the word order there. However, the reason in the end I think it should probably be the Lord has need of it, not his Lord has a need, is Luke does every once in a while get concerned about hiatus. And you'll notice that echai begins with a vowel, and autu ends with a vowel. So if you had chryon autu echai, you would have hiatus. Whereas when you put autu after curios and before chryon, you eliminate all the hiatus. That may be a consideration. But, you know, we shouldn't discount the possibility of this other translation. Yeah. I've never seen that. I don't think so. No, I don't think so. There is another possibility, which most of you probably don't know. It actually shows up a couple times in Luke. Autou was also used in classical Greek to mean here or there as an adverb. But I don't think that fits in this situation. Now, this would be the equivalent of a so-called future more vivid sentence where you have on plus the subjunctive and then the future indicative. Actually, I was wondering about that arrow ta. That is to say, why is that present? Now, you've been around me long enough to know that we're not going to adhere to the traditional theory that it's continuous action. I think this is a perfect example of why that theory doesn't work. It certainly wouldn't be if somebody keeps on asking you or something like that. But I think this is an example of emphasis. If somebody actually asks you, it's almost like dares, somebody actually asks you this, then this is what you will say to him. Or tries to ask you, something like that. 32. Apelthuntes de hoi ap estal menoi, hoiron kathos ipen autois. And having departed, the having been sent guys, the sent ones who were in a sent condition, all right, the ap estal menoi are perfect passive participle people. So, the ones who had been sent and were under commission at the time, something like that. The commissioned ones, having gone away, discovered just as he had told them. Land of Goshen, here's another form of Leo. Lianton de auton ton polon, ipon hoi curioia tu pros autus. Number four, liete ton polon. Okay, now we start with a GA. Lianton auton. While they were loosing the donkey, its lords, its masters, said to them. Notice pros autus rather than autois, kind of colloquialism. Ipon, weak aorist ending on a strong aorist stem. Why are you loosing the donkey? Hoide, switching the subject. Now hoide means you're going over to the other guys in the conversation. And they, ipon, they said, because the Lord has need of it, or if we shall say it, sir, his Lord has a need. Yes. Now, the one thing that you could argue here is that notice how autu does modify curioi in the previous sentence. See, his masters asked that question or said that. So, you could do that. And the thing that I would think, if that's the idea, that Luke would probably have written ha curios autu echai chryon, something like that. Put the chryon on the other side, then it'll be clear. But, you know, it's possible. 35. What's that? Well, no, but if you're a hiatus person, then you don't believe this other autu thing. I'm just saying that if you don't want to believe my hiatus explanation, and you are completely oblivious to that, then you might want to go in this other direction. Okay. Huh? Why lords is plural? Because it has a plural ending on it. Hey, that's what my students always tell me. I don't know. I don't know what that would be. Just several people were owners or something? I don't know. What's that?
That seems unlikely.
Yeah.
It struck me that passage in Isaiah.
Now what's that?
For the donkey knows the
oh, yeah. Yeah. The donkey knows its master. Yeah. Now, why?
It's often explained not so much as sort of collective ownership, but as more of the abstract, the concept of one who has authority.
Now in that passage in Isaiah, is it plural?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Well,
that's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's not
yeah. Well, no. That's a very interesting point.
Yeah.
No, because then it should have been the lords have need of it, huh? But well, we'll look that up here. See if that's true. That's very interesting. I didn't realize that. Okay. That's all we need. That's all we need. And then we use the electio difficilior. Right. 35. Kai egagun auton pros ton yesun, and they led it, him, the donkey, to Jesus, and epi hripsantes auton ta hematia. Notice the auton here, this possessive preceding again, the hematia. Could be, again, Carly, to stop the Hemate a auton. Not that there isn't hiatus now, but there'd be double alpha then. Yeah. And having thrown their garments upon the polon, epibibason tonyesun. I looked this up. You know, I thought epibibazo. What the heck is that? And here's where it's sort of helpful to have the big honking Liddell and Scott, because they remind you, and here's an easy way to remember this. Bibazo is, Andy, kind of like the hifio of bino. So bino is to go, and bibazo is to make somebody go. So they made Jesus go onto the colt. They mounted, you could say that, they got him to get up, they mounted Jesus onto the colt. Poroia menu de autu, and while he was traveling along, hup estronion, that's a great form, from strononymi, one of the old me verbs, which means to throw out, to strew flowers and things like that. So they strew under or along their garments on the road or in the way. Nice GA there. While he was traveling along, hup estronion, it's an imperfect, they were doing this. They proceeded to do it. 37. And gidzontos autu, and as he was drawing near, ade, already just now, at the time, right at that point of time, proste katabase tu aurus ton elion. Now this is interesting. As he was drawing near just then to the going down, maybe the down slope of the Mount of Olives, or it could be the descent in the sense of the physical traveling down. But I don't know. I wonder if it isn't to the down slope though. Yeah, he was going up. Note, by the way, here, now most of you will probably just go right past this. This is one of six occurrences in the New Testament of pros plus the dative. You're all used to seeing pros plus the accusative. What's wrong? Yes, that's right. And this is an old vestige of classical Greek. Because pros used to be a three-case preposition like epi or para. But the genitive went away first, and then the dative fell away, and then finally pros plus the accusative. So I take pros plus the dative to mean something like this. At, but, first there was a prior activity of coming to it. So you'd say something like this. I come up here to receive my Academy Award. I come up for Forrest Gump. And I am standing now across the podium. So I've come up to it, and now I am at it. And I think that's the idea here. That's one of the reasons why I don't like the idea of the descending. You know, I think he came up and was now kind of right there, sort of like at the top of the hill or something like that, or at the place ready to go down, and he's there, pros the descent of the mountain. Erkson ta pan ta plethos ton mateton. All the crowd of the disciples began. Notice erkson ta is a kind of a dreaded constructio ad sensum, a construction according to sense, because plethos, mass or great amount, is singular, and erkson ta is plural, but obviously it's like the word crowd. Crowd is just inherently a plural concept. So all the plethos began, chirontes, rejoicing, einein, to praise the Lord with a voice, a big one, concerning all which they saw powers. Concerning pason dynameon. All right, dunamis is a mighty deed or power, or where dynamite comes from that. And pason is all or every one of the powers. That's probably a better way to take it. There's no article there. Then hon is assimilation of the relative. All right, hon is going with pason in genitive, its genitive form. But it should have been accusative because it is the object of eidon. All right, but this is a good classical move. As I always tell you guys, this is what you guys always thought the relative pronouns should do, to assimilate to their antecedent. And in fact, classical Greek did that quite a lot. Of course, pason dynameon is genitive because peri takes the genitive. Now, which were the mighty deeds which they saw? Well, if you want to talk about John's gospel, the resurrection of Lazarus had taken place right before this. We don't have any record of this here, and so it could very well be the mighty deeds that he had done in his ministry on the way and which they had seen. I have a feeling that it's probably something more like that simply because it's plural. If that would be singular, I'd be a little bit more convinced that it would be a reference to something like that. Okay, there are no variants that are singulars. 38, saying, now Andy, this is an interesting one here. Look at this. Blessed is the coming guy, the king in the name of the Lord, in the highest, in the heaven peace, and glory in the highest. Now, those last two lines are not in the other Gospels. And you can see an obvious reference to Luke 2:14, which is the song of the angels at the birth of Jesus. There's also the addition of ha basilois in the second line. So you have a kind of a pair of chiasms this way. Oilogemenos ha erchomenos, A, B. Ha basilois, B, and onomati kiriu. Well, I don't know if I'd say that's A, that's sort of C. I don't know, what is this? Is this sort of a ballast variant that's filled its pants or something? I mean, what are these terms you have? You got all these things figured out. But it's... No, I'm talking about the first two lines. See, the basileus gives you a sort of an interesting chiasm with ha erchomenos. But oilogemenos is not really parallel to in the name of the Lord. It's kind of like A, B, B, C or something like that.
When you throw them all in the mixer and it comes out, what? Blessed is the coming king.
Right, right. Right, right. Right, that's is that a merismus?
No, it's a mixer.
A mixer, okay. I don't know. All right, then, in the last two lines, en urano irene, now this is the nice chiasm, in heaven peace and glory in highest places. So there you have A, B, B, A, with a chi kind of right in between there. I mean, it's about perfect even in the syllable length and so on. I was wondering as I looked this over whether a person ought to make something out of the fact that at the angel song at the birth, it's peace on earth rather than peace in heaven. Now, in other words, the crowd's kind of getting it, but they're not getting it all the way, because they're seeing glory for God in this, but perhaps not seeing its application and its actual incarnation in the person who is riding right before them. I think maybe a person could make a point about that. I hesitate to push it too hard because of the nice chiasm. I mean, it looks like it's being chiastic for that reason, but certainly it wouldn't have been hard to say something like en gay on earth, en gay irene, kai doxa en hypsistois. I mean, you could have done that. Maybe if you're preaching on this, you might want to make an observation that what you might call the incarnational aspect, that's what I'll call this, of the peace and so on actually being here on earth is sort of lost here by the crowd. And it's certainly lost vis-a-vis the entry of Jesus for his exodus, as we know from the Transfiguration. That is to say, for his salvific activity. Did you have a... Okay. All right, then 39 and 40. And some... tinnis is that indefinite. And some of the Pharisees... Now, the Pharisees are always slightly better guys in Luke than the rest of the mob, the rest of the leaders, and certainly than the Pharisees are in the other Gospels. And some of the Pharisees from the crowd, well, now, that's interesting, isn't it? From the crowd, because do you remember what it said up there in 37? It talked about all the crowd of the disciples. See, were these kind of believing ones? You remember back in 13, I think it was, where some of the Pharisees come to him and say, get out of here because John's going to kill you. So some of those must have been on rather positive terms with him. And some of the Pharisees from the crowd said, ipon, third plural, aorist indicative active, weak aorist termination, strong aorist stem again, to him, teacher, epitimeson, second singular, aorist imperative active, epitimao, rebuke your disciples. And replying, he said, I tell you, if these will be silent, fall silent probably, siopao, siopeso, the stones will cry out. Kradzo is to yell out. The stones will cry out. Now, notice here in this passage, in this e'an, it's e'an plus the future indicative, not e'an plus the aorist subjunctive, which would be a better grammar. So you can, of course, predict that if you go down where there's a flag on the play here, to quote Andy, siopesusin has as a variant siopesosin in Theta Psi families 1 and 13 and the majority of manuscripts, because that really is the grammatically correct reading. This is a good example of lectio difficilior. Now, this would be, I suppose, a kind of like a what would be called a future most vivid statement or something. If this will happen, then this will happen. I tell you, if they will do this, the stone surely will cry out. But I think that the possibility of them not doing that is small, and that's why he words it this way. I don't know, Andy, I'd be interested in your comment on the Habakkuk 2:11 side margin reference. That is the reference to the fact that people are dealing improperly and wickedly and building houses for bad purposes, and then it says the walls cry out against you and stuff like that. I don't know whether that would really have any relevance here. That doesn't sound right, because it's not the kind of passage where it says something like this: you are abusing your people, O wicked shepherds of Israel, and so even the very ground cries out against you. I mean, if you had something like that, you could see it, but I'm not sure that this is anything other than maybe mimicking the saying, or maybe a stitch in time saves nine. Maybe it's just a kind of a common saying, you know, something along those lines. But here we can see a couple of Lucan touches, I believe, that you might want to focus on if you're preaching. One would be that expansion of what the crowd cries out, this peace in heaven and glory in the highest, and then that rather more positive view of the leaders yet, with the Pharisees addressing him as teacher. I think it's probably fairly legitimate. You know, I don't think that it's a negative at all, like they're being snarky with him or something. And then in the beginning as well, the Jesus' foreknowledge is worth noting, and the disciples' obedience and the obedience of the other people as well. Finally, you might want to just take a look at Psalm 118:26, which is in the Septuagint, Psalm 117, and I believe it's 25 or something like that. It's off a verse. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Or if it's just that really they aren't believers. You know, it doesn't surprise me that some of the manuscripts leave of the disciples out after that crowd, all the crowd. Yeah, because you do see everybody's in Luke generally, people are more positive toward Jesus than they are in the other Gospels. And I think that's not surprising. But yeah, it's hard to know how to fit that in exactly. Okay, well, I got to let Andy have a little time here. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's the end.